7 4 3.
This is the second reel of a taped interview with Fred Arblaster in his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 2nd of the 7th, 2003, for the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. You were telling us about the various early tasks that you were to undertake during the war years. Now, I'm interested if we can talk about how you came to be involved with linguistics. When was that to occur, and what did that involve?
Well, from memory, I think it was in 1943. And at that time, I was at the Jungle Training Centre in Canungra. And I was...
What did that training involve, the jungle training?
Well, I was on the staff. I was working in the QM store, of course, and I didn't do a lot of the training, but I did enough, thank you very much.
Well, what did that part of it involve?
The training?
Yes.
Oh, it was very rigorous. In fact, we were training Americans there. A couple of them come to mind. It was, believe it or not, Willie D. Wilson and Orville G. Copeland. I can still remember their names. Goodness knows what's happened to them. I don't know. But the training was fairly rigorous because it was bitterly cold at night. It's hard to believe, but I've seen ice on the water at 11 o'clock in the morning. And Canungra, by the way, is just inland from surface paradise in beautiful high country there. The training involved marches and swimming in rivers and crossing rivers and going across rivers by ropes and you name it. Live ammunition too. If you happened to put your head up, you were a goner. Yes, it was very rigorous training, and I don't know whether the Americans had any similar type of training establishment, and that's why they were there. I think that's it in a nutshell.
The training, obviously the jungle training, were you being briefed as to where you might be sent?
No.
Do you have any idea of any of the actions that have been taking place in the South Pacific at all?
Oh, yes, only what one read in the paper.
What were some of the ones that stood out?
My memory is fairly blurred because I had other things on my mind, but the fact that the Japanese were just coming south, they were seemed to be invincible. It was fairly frightening.
Mm. Things like the Kokoda Track?
Oh, well, that's a different matter. They were advancing. The first time they were ever turned back was, oddly enough, as you possibly well know, by a militia unit on the Kokoda Track. Yes.
People talk of the Kokoda obviously being... people talk of the Kokoda Track being a fundamental... operation in relation to the stopping of the Japanese coming to Australia. Some people would even question whether the Japanese intended to take Australia, but that's another story. In relation to the Kokoda Track, following the Kokoda Track, was there still a sense that the Japanese were a threat to Australia?
Very difficult to answer questions like that. I was a soldier doing my duty. I don't think I thought much about it. We just had to beat the bastards, and and defend the country. It was as elementary as that.
So there was in September that the Kokoda track came to a sort of conclusion in relation, September of 42. Tell us the story of how you came to be involved with the linguistics operations.
Well, it was very simple. I was, as I said, at Canungra Jungle Training Camp, and I was transferred to Melbourne to... full stop. I was transferred to Melbourne, and I did not know why. But it's not... For me, it wasn't for me to argue why. It suited me to go back to Melbourne. And I reported to, I think it was 339 Swanson Street, Melbourne, which was a big new, might have been an AMP building, but I'm not certain, that the army had taken over. And I found out later it was mainly intelligence. And so I arrived there and reported in, and this pipsqueak said to me, "Well, where have you been?" I told him. He said, "Have you had any leave lately?" I said, "No." He said, "You better have a week off." I thought, this is a fairly good sort of a rot. So I had a week off, and I reported back, and he said, scratched his head, "I don't know what to do. Would you like to learn Japanese?" I said to him, "I beg your pardon. Would you like to learn Japanese?" And he said, "Yes." "So where is this?" He said, "It's here in Melbourne." "Oh," I said, "that interests me. How long would that take?" He said, "Oh, 9 months." "Oh," I said, "I see. And where would that be?" "It'd be in Alderfleet building in Collins Street." Or was it Burke? It doesn't matter. I said, I think you're on, but there's another problem. There's no accommodation. We've had it. We can't accommodate you. Do you think you can find accommodation?" I said, "Well, I think so," because I'd been married on a previous leave coming back from Western Australia on the way up to Queensland. "And yes," I said, "I think I can." And he said, "We'll pay you for it." I said, "Thank you." So that was agreed. I said, "Yes, well, I'll start." And my wife was living with her parents, who was nowhere else, and they were gracious enough to accommodate me. I just gave her whatever the money was. And she said, "I don't need all that." And I said, not my wife, my mother-in-law. I said, "Well, you're having it because I'm getting it from the army. You're entitled to it, you accommodating me." And so I reported to the Alderfleet building, and that's how it all started. That's how I got into Japanese.
Have you had any interest or background in any languages at all up until this
point? Well, this is because I have been talking.
Sorry, continue. You were going to answer the question.
That's very interesting, because I've been talking to Anita Pritchard, who also was a linguist. I've been talking to her recently, and I said to her, "Well, I can't understand why I was chosen to be a student of Japanese." And she said to me, "Well, Fred, did you ever learn Latin?" I said, "I hardly know a word of Latin. I've never studied it." She said, "What about French?" I said, "Ah, yes. I had matriculated in French. From high school." She said, "Well, that's exactly why." And I also, in the back of my mind, remember that at some stage we were asked to fill out a form setting our academic qualifications. And she, Anita, is quite positive, and she would know that's why I was chosen to learn the Japanese language. And from the particular book that John mentioned, I realised that this country or the Army and the Navy, I suppose, and the Air Force were desperate for Japanese linguists at that time.
Well, the book you're mentioning is Linguists in Uniform, The Japanese Experience by Colin Punch. And I'm interested that you mentioned that the Army, Navy and the Air Force were desperate for linguists in Japanese. Was that something that you were aware of at the time?
No. No, again, I was a soldier. I was doing what had to be done.
I'm interested in the principle that here was Australia supposedly under threat of being invaded by the Japanese, and they were desperate to get linguists who could speak the language. What were you actually told in relation to what your job would entail as a linguist once you trained?
I wasn't told. And I don't think anybody ever knew, and that will probably be revealed in... I was just to learn Japanese. Again, as a soldier, my job was to learn Japanese, read it, write it, and speak it. And I did it.
Well, tell us what that involved. You mentioned the older fleet building.
I frankly can't understand how we were taught. In that book, there's a lady called Dorothy Selwood mentioned. She was irreverently called Cho-Cho-san, which in Japanese means Madam Butterfly. And she was in charge of this polyglot lot of 15 or 20 service people at various stages of learning the Japanese language, and somehow we were taught. I'd have to say, I think a lot of it was up to the individual. If you applied yourself, you learned the language, but a lot of it, and I've spoken to Anita about this on the phone recently, and she agrees totally. And there's one passage in that book which says the majority of people applied themselves, but we had a few no-hopers. And I said to her, well, I can't think of any of them. She said, well, I'll tell you. And I'm not mentioning any names, but yes, I said to her, yes, that'd be right. Mm-hmm. And oh, I don't know whether you want me to go on with this, but somehow or other, from somewhere, they had garnered Japanese children's school books, primers, whatever the correct pronunciation is, I don't know. And these just started off from the absolute basics of writing and then speaking Japanese. And as I look back, one could not have had a better grounding in the language, because I was starting to learn it as if I was a child of school age.
I'm interested, obviously, the first day. What do you recall of the first day of learning Japanese?
Oh, I can't tell you. I don't know. I just went there and wondered what the hell I'd stuck, I think. No, I don't know, John. It's 60. It's over 60 years ago, isn't
it? Well, tell us about the characters. I mean, were there any Japanese people, for instance?
Yes, Dorothy Selwood. And it doesn't mention it in the book, but she was married to, I think I'm right when I say this, an Australian missionary who went over to Japan. And when the war broke out, or before the war, he left Japan and brought her with him, because of course they were quite legally married, and they had a house in Mount Waverley, I think it was, from memory. And they recruited her because she was bilingual. Having been married, she spoke gave quite good English, and I was perfectly fluent in Japanese.
Did she talk to you about the situation? Was there a sort of communication about the current state of play at the time in relation to the war? Or was
no. No, it was strictly business learning Japanese. But here again I refer to Anita. She tells me that she watched this woman walk home to catch the train down Collins Street and Berks, to Flinders Street Station, and she dodged from doorway to doorway because he was a Japanese person in this country, in Melbourne, and the Japanese were bloody detested. So she did her bit, in my view, Dorothy Selwood, for this country. Mm. And I certainly wasn't the country of her birth. I don't know whether I'm answering your questions.
I'm interested in relation to the situation, obviously, that here you are learning Japanese. Were you aware of some of the uses that your skills might be put to later?
No. No.
So tell us then the process. You're talking about the primers, the reading from the books in relation to learning Japanese, the children's books.
Yes.
Tell us what was involved in literally learning Japanese from scratch.
It's very hard to explain because it's a terrible language to try and learn, because it's a bastard of a language. That's the right word to use, because they had the spoken language, the spoken Japanese language, and they had the katakana or hiragana, which is sort of our alphabet, or very much so. But then they had no characters, and they, donkeys years ago, adopted the Chinese kanji characters, and that's where the complication came in the language, actually, because I don't think this is important.
No, I'm interested to know how you came to understand the Japanese language, and obviously this is part of it.
Well, I came to understand it because it was my job to understand it. I was a soldier, and that's what I had to do, and I did it.
Were you given a time frame? Were you told that?
No. No. It was suggested it might be 9 months, but I think the whole thing depended on the individual's ability to absorb the language and get to a sufficient stage of proficiency that you could be released into the field, because they were desperate for us. Mm. Mm. No, there was no time frame.
They weren't telling you why they were desperate.
No.
In relation to the situation, it's a complicated language, as you mentioned. What was the hardest thing about learning Japanese, do you think, for you? You mentioned the characters.
Yes.
You were going to tell us a little bit more about those characters. Tell us about why those characters were such a difficult process to know.
Well, if you've ever looked at Japanese characters, I think you'd understand it. They are very, very complicated, very complex. In fact, there have been, of recent years, moves, both in China and Japan, to simplify them, but they're still very complicated. It's very hard to explain. they're quite complicated. And to a Western mind, they mean nothing at all.
I find it very interesting because obviously Australia is an English-speaking country.
Yes.
In the middle of an Asian region, be fair to say that it's, apart from New Zealand, the only other country in the Southern Hemisphere almost that speaks English as its primary source of language. Yeah. What were you expected to learn other languages, or was it just Japanese? Obviously Malaysian. Language,
no, I learned Japanese. I picked up Indonesian. I picked up a bit of Tagalog too, but I could get by in wasn't called Indonesian then, I forget what it was called. I just had to pick that up as I went by because of things that happened later.
Okay, well, we'll talk about those. The numbers of lessons, How stringent, how busy were you learning Japanese?
As busy as I wanted to be.
How many classes were you expected to attend a week?
We didn't have... I wish I'd think it was here, but we didn't have classes. It just sort of rolled along. And... we'd talk with each other, and I'd talk with Mrs. Dorothy Selwood, and, well, Anita, who was a sort of a tutor too, and it was a mutual help organisation. How's that? Yeah. The more advanced students helped the less advanced, and so it went on. But it's very hard to explain.
So you'd group up together in couples?
Yes, and couples and groups, and small groups, yes. And we'd talk and discuss kanji and the written language and so on, yes.
Can you give us an idea of the atmosphere of the Alder Fleet building?
Well, I can't give you an atmosphere of the Alder Fleet building as a whole. It was a censorship school. There were strange people flitted in and out and in and out and in.
What sort of strange people?
Oh, there was one lovely bird, Miss Sung. She flitted in and out. I don't quite know what she did. And because it was a censorship school, a censorship building, there were people versed in different languages, Italian, Greek, anything at all, any overseas language. I remember having my first haircut by a female hairdresser opposite Alder Fleet, which was quite a unique experience in those days. That's got nothing to do with the Alder Fleet, but we're talking back in the 43, 44.
I'm interested, 60 years ago, I'm interested in relating a situation. To what degree there was an importance for secrecy in the work that you were doing? Could you tell your wife, for instance, what you were working, what you were doing?
My wife certainly knew. But, and I only heard this of recent years from her, rest her soul. She had the field security call on her. Because at this stage, we were living in a flat. And the landlady must have, or not must, she did. She discovered Japanese writing stuffed under, it would have been the boiler for washing. it was writing that I'd done because I'd been at home studying and writing Japanese and so on. And she reported, the landlady reported this to the authorities, and the authorities came out and they apparently put my wife through the third degree. And she said, well, there's the character. She must have said, well, my husband's learning Japanese. And they went away, they went, and they must have checked up and found out that, that what she had said was true, and she never heard anything further. But, yeah, I think people were generally fairly, you asked about secrecy, were fairly paranoid about the fact that there could have been a, I think the word's fifth columnist in their midst. I don't know whether that answers your question.
I'm interested, obviously, you mentioned the censorship side of things, and you mentioned, obviously, the Alder Fleet building, Collins Street, 475 Collins Street. I was interested in whether people knew what was going on in that building.
I would suggest no. There was no reason for people to know. There were just people going in and out. And no, I don't think the general public had any idea.
How did your lessons progress? How did you feel as though you were going?
Oh, clearly was making progress.
Well, presumably you start with A, B, C.
Yeah, kaki, kuke, ko, rari, ruri, ma. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And I could speak. I could actually speak. I'm not prepared to say fluent Japanese, but I could get by in Japanese after a few months. Yes, I felt I was making progress. Well, I have some bent for languages. Some people don't, but I have some bent for it. And I battled on. I can still speak to myself in it.
Well, say something to us in it. Something that you were taught early on to learn.
Oh, dear. Ima wananji jusuka. What time is it? Amaga fute masenka? It's not raining, is it?
No. Not at the moment.
No. What I said, it's not raining. Oh, yeah, I can still speak Japanese. In fact, 5 or 6 years ago, where we were living elsewhere, a friend of mine went past with an Oriental woman. And I said, Nihonjin desu? Which means, are you in Japanese? She said, yes. And we were chatting away, like, not fluently, I've forgotten it. In fact, I got in a taxi a couple of weeks ago, and a little black-haired woman was driving. I said, pardon me, but are you Chinese or Japanese? And she said, I'm Japanese. And I spoke to her in Japanese, and she bloody nearly crashed the car. So, yes, I'd need a couple of weeks, and I'd be right. In fact, I worked for Shell, and at one stage they implored me to be a Japanese interpreter for them. Well, they bribed me, you can go to Japan and stay at the best of accommodation and go and stay with a family, do anything, just learn Japanese and just be our linguist at large. Anyway, I thought it over. I said, no, not on you, Nelly. I've had enough of this caper. I just want to be home with my wife and kids. So I refused that. Anyway, what they did was they brought some Japanese over here, which was quite interesting. And with a quixotic sense of humour, I had to work with these Japanese. It was very interesting. I'm going back a few years, and I'm digressing from what you want to know. It's nothing to do with the War Museum, I'm sorry.
Well, I'm interested. Obviously, these were skills that you were to learn as a soldier.
Yes. Yes. And I used
it's got everything to do with the Imperial War Museum. And that was something that you were learning for,
I see.
For the cause of the war.
Oh, but what happened after doesn't is irrelevant.
I'm interested in how that affects your later life. I'm obviously more interested in at the moment talking about your wartime experience. I'll just turn over first.